RSN Summer Breakfast Club. Might as
well be. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Summer Breakfast Club on RSN 927. Andrew Mays and Glenn McFarlane with you through until 8.30 this morning before Michael Felgate takes over with Racing Pulse. Plenty to come on the show today. We'll have all the dissection of what was a dramatic fifth day yesterday up in Sydney. Wasn't that gripping test cricket for the entire day? We'll have the early mail for you before 7 o'clock. We'll head to Cleveland after their amazing story yesterday in the NFL. Lisa Devanna to join us from the Melbourne Victory. Craig Gabriel on the latest in the tennis world with qualifiers underway overnight, and also Baxter Holt from the Sydney Thunder as well before 7 o'clock. So a lot to get through. You can get involved anytime you like. 1300 652 927. Shoot us a text 0416 90 50 52. Jump on the Facebook page at RSN Racing and Sport or on Twitter at RSN 927 or at RSN Breakfast. Macca, good morning.
Good morning, Maisie.
How'd you sleep?
Not too bad last night. I think I was shocked by what happened at the cricket yesterday, and I just think going to sleep and forgetting about it is a good way of getting around it. So it's pretty warm, though, wasn't it?
Oh, I had a crap one.
Did you? No good.
Nah. And the little fella is getting crook.
Oh, no.
Which is no good.
That's
and in
no
the
good.
Heat, it's even worse.
Yeah, kids in heat don't go. Don't mix.
The summer cold.
The summer cold, I know.
Mind you, we've been lucky. I've been sick for, touch wood, I've been sick for a year because we haven't been.
No one's going outside, so that's the thing, isn't it? No one's going outside. No, kids and heat don't mix, do they?
So not at all.
They do, though, when your neighbour's away and they've got a pool.
Did you jump in the pool yesterday?
Twice. Yeah, had to do it. It was good. Just a nice, refreshing sort of thing.
I actually didn't check the temperature. Did it get to 37 or 38 degrees?
It did out in our area. Yeah. I live out in the northeast suburbs, and I think it was about 37 out there, so it was quite warm. So I went for a walk. I got home yesterday. Stupidity. Went for a walk yesterday when I got home after the show, and it was already about 34 or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Don't want to be going out later in the day.
No.
We actually haven't had that hot a summer.
No, we haven't. It's been bizarre, hasn't it? But again, if you think about it, it really starts to hit now. So I'm thinking, Australian Open, February is going to be interesting at this stage. It's going to be very warm, isn't it?
Could be a huge talking point because normally it is anyway, the weather. But if we get a run of those 40-degree days,
yes.
Jeez.
The wet bulb. No longer the wet bulb, isn't it?
So, I miss the wet bulb.
Yeah, I know. Whatever happened to it?
Well, I went to the A-League.
Yes, that's
right.
The
A-League started using the wet bulb with 97 different formulas that you had to take out of the wet bulb.
Can't say I ever really understood the wet bulb, but that's another thing. So,
No. 22 today, a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, and it's a bit fresh out there this morning.
It was 20 degrees.
Oh, it's beautiful. I was wearing shorts. I'm starting to get cold again.
Oh, come on.
Do you have the fan? Do you have the air conditioning going all night? Or do you have the fan?
Nah, on, off, fan on.
Oh, the fan's good, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I reckon it's left me with a dry throat.
I think that's what it does
do. I've been drinking about 19 waters through the show this morning.
No tests for you today. No COVID tests. We'll keep steer clear of them.
I'm hoping it's just a dry throat from the fan. Not anything more suspicious than that.
No, the fan can do that to you, I think.
33 tomorrow, so we're heading back up
again
to a bit of warmth tomorrow.
33 is about perfect, I reckon, isn't it?
I glow in the dark. My skin does not cope well with the sun. Mm. I get sunburned from the moon sometimes. And 33.
Still too hot.
It's bordering on too
the
hot.
The 40s, you must not handle
the 40s
at all.
Hate the 40s. Hate the 40s. So do you like it when it's...
I don't. 40s I'm not so convinced about, but anywhere in the 30s I'm okay.
Yeah, once it gets to 33, 34, 35...
That's about my limit, I think.
I'm putting the blinds up.
40's no good.
No.
No good can come from 40.
25 to 28 and a cool breeze is the perfect temperature.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or is that too cold for you?
A little bit fresh. Probably should have lived in different climate than Melbourne, really. But anyway, no, it's all good. It was a good day yesterday, nice and warm. So
was. Did you stay inside most of the day apart from jumping in the pool?
Yeah, had a walk, two goes at the pool, and that was about it, I think, as well. So,
it was gripping yesterday. Test cricket.
It was
test cricket at its best.
Anyone who says I mean, I don't think anyone says it anymore. I think it's had a resurgence, hasn't it? Which thankfully it has. That even the younger generation now, can understand how gripping it actually is. To have something go for 5 days and to have a draw the way it was gripping viewing. And you could see the tension. We'll talk about that later on. But the tension from everyone involved, it got to a new level again yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing.
Mm.
I think... for the first time, I mean, it has been gripping Test cricket at times this summer.
Yeah, it's been good.
It's been good without being outstanding, and yesterday was outstanding.
It was.
Especially with a result we just didn't expect was on the cards. I either thought, if India got on a roll, so when Rishabh Pant got going yesterday, I thought they can win this.
I was thinking about having a little investment as well. I didn't, but I was thinking about it.
The Punters Club had suggested that when we were talking to Trent Langsdale yesterday, man, about $26 at the start of the day.
Yeah.
But we didn't invest. But the draw was still $7 with about 3 hours to go.
Yeah, and I don't know, the longer it went, it was painful to watch. But I think that was painful being the, I didn't mean to say that, P-A-I.
Well done.
N-E, I did not mean to say that, but it was difficult to watch.
You're right.
That was the, I think that was a mistake, so I went early with a mistake. So it was one of those ones where I think the ramifications could be pretty big too, overall, long term, I think. That's going to be the interesting watch with the Australian cricket. But how brave were the Indians? They were so brave.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, yeah. When did an Australian team last dig in like that?
Yeah, it's been a while.
To bat out a draw.
And I think that's the thing. We've always been, you know, dubious about India's ability, you know, particularly here, to actually grind out a draw like the way they did yesterday. But they were, you know, they were so brave yesterday.
Yeah. We'll talk about them after 8 o'clock. Not sure if there's many Indians left after the carnage of the Sydney.
No.
There might be less Aussies as well going into...
Well, there's a few injuries with the Aussies too. Not as many as the Indians, mind you.
No. But the casualty ward was huge for both teams. And unfortunately, Will Pukowski... was added to that list yesterday.
What a shame if he doesn't play. It looked an innocuous thing, but, you know, obviously the dive, he's just extended the shoulder and, it looked really painful.
We'll have a talk about Rishabh Pant too. His amazing recovery from his injury.
He did fight back pretty strongly,
prevented him from kicking. We'll have a chat about that after 8 o'clock. Right open to everyone. We'll get your thoughts off the SMS. If you want to hit this up early on that, 0416 90 50 52 or give us a buzz, 1300 652 927. Big Bash action last night as well. There's plenty of sport going on now, which is actually good. We're getting into a nice little groove, but in the Big Bash, unfortunately for the Melbourne Stars, the Adelaide Strikers too good again, and the Stars' inconsistent form continues through this Big Bash, so a pretty comfortable win in the end, and the Stars now have a few questions hanging over their head with fixtures being moved from Melbourne as well. We spoke to Sam Harper yesterday.
Poor Sam Harper.
He's
coming home finally. He's been in every state in Australia and now he's off to Adelaide.
Yeah. So I think there's about another 7 Big Bash fixtures that have been moved, a couple out of Melbourne, which is disappointing for all of us here in Melbourne and Victoria who are hoping to go to the cricket, see some live sport. But last night, the Stars 7 for 149. They weren't really good enough with the bat. Could never really get going.
No.
Didn't help with Glenn Maxwell getting out first ball as well. And then the Adelaide Strikers 5 for 150, able to chase it down with an over to spare. At times through the middle of their innings, they looked a little shaky. But they were able to get back on track. When Alex Carey got out, I thought, oh, they're half a chance here, the Stars. And they were pumped up as well. But the middle order stood tall for the for Adelaide, with Jono Wells making 36. Good player, Jono Wells. Very underrated.
A good player. Very underrated. Absolutely.
Yeah, just makes runs consistently. Ryan Gibson made 22, not out at the end of 13 deliveries, and Jake Weatherald 19 from 16. But did you watch 7 or Fox last night?
No, it was a 7 last night. Just we have two rooms in the house. One's the Fox room. I was in the 7 room last night.
Maxie's good on the mic, isn't he?
I was about to say the same thing. As far as having a player talk you through, and I love it how he has a dig at his teammates and in a jocular sort of way. I think he's fantastic on the mic, isn't he?
We're going to talk to him tomorrow.
Yes, I know.
So it'll be good to just chat to him about that as well.
He's got a future there after post-career.
Yeah. I often wonder too, in a number of situations, especially this year, they have spoken to them a lot, especially when players taking place.
Oh, there was a couple. There was an instant, couple of instances last night where the ball's actually been bowled and they're still talking. Like, that was always a bit of, you know, taboo. You can't do that.
No.
That was going on last night.
There was a few odd ones. I don't know whether there was a delay or what was going on.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure even there was a delay. It was a couple of them. You feel uncomfortable too, don't you?
You do.
When you feel a little bit uncomfortable. And you shouldn't because it's...
You're screaming at the commentator.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Don't say anything.
But, no, he deals with it really well and it's all water off a duck's back. He's got I don't know how they do this, but concentrating on his field setups and plans while at the same time having conversation to the commentators.
Yeah.
I think it goes to show probably how well-educated he is on what every strategic plan is for every single batsman, because it's just second nature to him. He can reel it off, but then still have a conversation with the commentators as well. So, yeah, we'll ask him about that tomorrow on the show. Glenn Maxwell will join us after 8 o'clock. So very much looking forward to that. It was ahead of, hopefully, a number of games here at the MCG, but 7 games have been moved. So 5 have been moved from Sydney with their COVID outbreak. And a lot of this has got to do with border closures and permits and all that sort of stuff as well. Jan 14 was supposed to be the Heat v the Renegades at Marvel.
Mm.
That has been changed, so that will now be played at Manuka. And on January 21... that was the Strikers and the Heat, which was actually supposed to be played at the MCG.
Mm.
So no Melbourne teams there, but to be played at the G, that is now going to be played at the Adelaide Oval. So a bit of a setback, really.
It is. You know, you've got the Sixers and the Thunder, likewise to be played at Adelaide Oval. It's strange. And all it says is we're going to have 2021 is going to be challenging in a sporting sense all the way through. We had Brett Sutton yesterday talking about the AFL and how he predicted that 2021 is going to be equally as challenging as it was last year, which is hard to believe when you think we're sort of back in a bit of semi-normality at the moment. We're thinking that we'll be sweet with the AFL, but because of the border issues and you know the issues that you now need a permit to get into Victoria, and you've got your red, green and yellow zones. I'm not sure there is any yellow zones at the moment, but if you look at that, it's going to be a difficult balancing act with AFL footy for 2021.
Did you see the airport last night? Some of the queues?
I didn't know. It was big, was it?
Oh, my goodness. Because they introduced this permit system, but the website melted, so you could hardly get on.
I did hear that.
So people were waiting 3 hours to get on. So they've landed in Melbourne. They've changed the rules. People are on the phones, just in lines, waiting to get their permit.
And what you want to do when you get off a plane is just go home.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing worse than when you're caught up when you're at customs or whatever. There's no customs, obviously, because we're only travelling.
Might be soon
soon the way we're going. There might be customs as well. But you just want to get home. So it's going to be a challenge with the footy, and we're not that far away. We know that, so it'll be interesting. Given that it is a national comp, we might just have a Victorian comp this year. Just you know, go back to the old VFL days for a period of time.
I wonder. I wonder how this all happens, right? Because if you need permits or whatever, I just think back to like if you were going on a school trip or whatever. A lot of Victorian kids get to go to Canberra, and in grade 6, that's the big one. And I remember we went to Canberra trying to organise 40 men and women. It's hard enough organising kids where you do it for them. 40 Definitely. Men and women, have you filled out your permit? Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's tough.
Can you imagine Dusty misses semi-final because didn't fill out his permit?
Well, if he misses semi-final or prelim final or grand final, Richmond don't win the flag. So there's the course of history changed.
My goodness me. Looked good yesterday. Hasn't missed a beat.
What is he doing, though? Let's be honest. What the hell is Dusty doing winning a time trial in January? What is going on?
Because he's not... Is he traditionally a good performer in pre-season, or is he just a good athlete?
I think he's just a good athlete. No, the bottom line is, if you talk to people, he works exceptionally hard, but he likes to hide the fact that he works exceptionally hard. Now, he didn't hide it yesterday. He was...
No.
When you've got number one, Dustin Martin, number two, Trent Koch, and where are all these young Tiger Bucks up there trying to knock him off their mantle?
Yeah,
it is. He looked lean too.
He did.
I don't know if you saw the footage of him. He looked really lean. So he'd had it's been a fairly short turnaround in a sense for players. So he's clearly stayed very fit.
Well, hopefully chat to a couple of players this week who are coming back from different clubs, because I will be interested to hear what sort of regimes they're on over the Christmas break, because they've only had a few weeks off.
Yeah, it's been a short sort of stint in that sense. Like, some of them did train a little bit before Christmas, but not a lot.
So they would have been doing stuff at home.
Yeah, definitely. They've all given their indications of what they need to do through their break. But he looked incredible yesterday, Dusty. So,
yeah.
Could he win four? Norm Smith? Who knows? Like, it'd be amazing if he could. I mean, it's good to win three. No one else will ever beat that, I don't think.
That goal he kicked in the granny this year, where does that rate for you in terms of...
Right up there.
Grand final.
It was extraordinary. That performance in the grand final was...
Yeah.
I mean, clearly they don't win without Dustin Martin. And not you don't always say that about a team in a grand final, do you? You think of grand
Especially
final...
Especially nowadays.
No, you think about a grand final, you think of very even teams, and he is head and shoulders... At his best, he is head and shoulders above anyone else at his best right now. Like, you think about... And I've got a lot of time and respect for Patrick Dangerfield, what an outstanding player he is. But Dusty, to the next level, isn't he?
Yeah.
He just and he loves the big performance, and you just think back to, you know, if you're a Melbourne supporter, you're probably thinking that was the draft, wasn't it? The Melbourne had two picks before Richmond, and you just think back and you think, oh my goodness,
who were they?
It was Trengove and Scully, I think it was. Is that correct?
Yep.
I think it was, wasn't it? I'm just trying to remember that's the right draft. I am.
Yep. And I was wondering, in that same draft, did they get Grimes at about pick 15?
They might have, actually. Yeah, they might have. They end up being the captains, the two Jacks for a period, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, no, it's just one of those things where he is head and shoulders. And, you know, obviously a lot of talk about the Tigers and Damien Hardwick and... situations there as well.
We might get to that a little bit later on as well. Jack Riewoldt speaking. Yesterday, first time we sort of heard from anyone from Richmond regarding the situation. It was believed Damien Hardwick addressed the players yesterday about it before they commenced training, but we'll park that for a little bit later on in the show. Time to take a break. It's 20 past six on your Tuesday morning. Plenty to come still on the show. We're going to head to Cleveland fairly shortly as well. That was an unbelievable
story. What a story this is.
Yesterday.
What a story this is.
We got from no chance. And with about 15 people out because of COVID,
my goodness,
they pulled off the impossible and were dominant in the end.
We were half joking yesterday.
We'll head there in about 15 minutes' time. A bit more to get through before we head stateside. Time for a break. Back with more after this. Was the Cleveland Browns getting emotional talking about it?
This is film material, this, I reckon.
The Cleveland Browns were unbelievable yesterday, shooting out pretty early to a 28-0 lead. And then from then on, were able to consolidate and win 48-37 in their wildcard round playoff. But what makes it more amazing was the fact that they had half their team out.
Yep.
I mean, COVID had swept through the squad. Their coach was in the basement watching the game. And they've made it through. Just a magnificent story that I think we're all following yesterday as the cricket was on as well. Jake Trotter is a Cleveland Browns journo with ESPN. He joins us on the line. Jake, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Yeah, hey guys, what's going on?
Well, I just want to rewind 24 hours with you. Tell me honestly, what were your thoughts going into yesterday's matchup, considering you had a coach from the basement of his own house and you had a number of key players that were out of the squad?
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of confidence that they would win the game. They have been a resilient team this year, and so I thought that they would hang tough. But you have to remember, the Browns had not won in Pittsburgh in 17 games. They had a 17-game losing streak, third longest road losing streak to a single opponent in NFL history. They had not won a playoff game since 1994, and so... with that backdrop and then everything that happened last week, just didn't seem very likely that they were going to win that game. But after the first play, and the Steelers snapped the ball into the end zone, and then they intercept Roethlisberger on the ensuing drive, you began to think, okay, this might be different, and sure enough, it was.
Absolutely extraordinary. I can't believe it, Jake. It was amazing. Now, with Kevin Stefanski, obviously watching it from the basement, he's basically suggested he might be right next time round when you go around again. What's the prognosis with him and COVID and getting him back?
Yeah, he said today he's expecting to be back with the team on Thursday. You know, he'll continue to lead, virtual meetings over Zoom. In the meantime, but he's very optimistic he's going to be back on the sidelines by next Sunday when they play Kansas City, and that he'll be with the team Thursday. You know, he was talking about what it was like to watch that game in the basement today. He said that you know, he actively paused early on before kickoff and didn't realize he was like 45 seconds behind the live feed and his family who was upstairs. You know, he was isolating from them because of COVID. He heard them go crazy and was trying to figure out what was going on and realized that he was behind and that, that some great play was about to happen for the Browns. But he said, you know, he was really nervous. You know, he was pacing around watching the game on TV. And, you know, he couldn't eat anything or he didn't want to eat anything because due to COVID, he can't taste right now. So he just said it was a kind of a crazy experience and is glad that that will be a one-off for him, it looks like.
I can feel a movie coming on here if you can go all the way here. How much did the players actually use this as part of their preparation as well? I think for memory, one of the Steelers had said, you know, the Browns is the Browns. You know, they obviously was a little bit dismissive in terms of, you know, leading into the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge motivating factor. I mean, they can say whatever they want now, but, you know, Baker Mayfield, Cleveland's quarterback, he put up a video on Instagram before the game. The title of that was Browns, the Browns is the Browns. Afterward, I mean, you saw a bunch of players posting on Twitter, you know, the Browns is the Browns and trolling Juju Smith-Schuster for those comments. You saw a video from the locker room of them saying, you know, over and over again, the Browns is the Browns. So it was a rallying cry, no doubt, for that game. And I think it will be one for them for the rest of the playoff run.
How much did they get to practice during the week as a squad?
How much will they get to this week?
No, but before this game, how much did they actually get to practice before they took on Pittsburgh yesterday?
Yeah, they had one practice. Their Wednesday and Thursday practices got canceled because of positive tests, so their training facility was closed. They were able to get in a practice on Friday. Obviously, Kevin Stefanski, their head coach, was not there for that. And then they had a little bit of kind of an extended walkthrough on Saturday morning before flying to Pittsburgh. So, effectively, they had like 1.5 practices for the game.
Will they get a few more this week in the build-up to their next match?
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe they shouldn't practice it all this week. But
yeah.
Assuming they don't have positive tests, and at least so far through today, they haven't had any. You know, they'll be back on the field on Wednesday getting ready for the Chiefs. But, you know, this team is really for the last, like, 3 weeks or so. I mean, they are day-to-day. You know, there have been times where they've had to cancel workouts and practices last second. You know, they've done virtual walkthroughs. You know, before their game against the Jets 2 weeks ago, they had a positive test and a bunch of high-risk close contact on Saturday before they were set to fly to New Jersey, which knocked out their walkthrough. And so Sunday morning, just a few hours before kickoff, they had a walkthrough on the fifth floor of the parking garage attached to their hotel, kind of by Newark. So, I mean, they're used to, you know, being adaptable, as Baker Mayfield has put it, and you know, they're hoping they won't have to do any of that this week. But they have shown that they can adjust if stuff like that happens to them.
Jake, I've got my new favorite NFL team forever now, I reckon, as well. But just in regard to that, obviously now against Kansas, it's a huge challenge again coming up on Sunday. Do you give them any outside chance? We've seen them already produce one miracle. Can they produce another one?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a chance. You know, when they've been hot offensively and healthy, they have shown that they can score with anybody in the NFL. You know, they put up points against the Baltimore Ravens on that Monday Night Football game. Last month, they scored, 41 against another playoff team, the Tennessee Titans, midway through the season. You know, Baker Mayfield had 4 first-half touchdown passes in that game. So they can hang. It's just a question of whether they can get enough stops. And even last night, you saw them kind of struggle to slow down Roethlisberger once he got into a little bit of a rhythm. So I think this game could be a shootout. You know, it's funny, Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, they had an epic shootout when they were in college, when Baker was at Oklahoma and Mahomes was at Texas Tech. So all kinds of college football record. The final score was 56-59. I believe Mahomes threw for like 800 yards in that game, which is just like insane. 300 yards is a pretty good game in college football, and he almost tripled that. So it'll be fun if they get into another shootout that's reminiscent of that college game back in 2016. But you cannot count out the Browns after what they showed last night, that's for sure.
No, absolutely. I can't wait to see them take the field on Monday morning, Australian time. We can't wait to watch. Jake, thanks so much for your time this morning, and all the best on Sunday night. Your time.
Okay, guys. Thanks for watching.
Still plenty to come on the show. Going to talk a bit of tennis with Craig Gabriel later on. Baxter Holt from the Sydney Thunder, and also Lisa Devanna, who is joining us right now. She's ready to go, the Australian and Melbourne victory veteran. Lisa, good morning and welcome to RSN.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good, after seeing your goal of the weekend and Melbourne victory smash 6 into the back of the net. Must be nice to finish the weekend on a high like you did.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was a great result. It was a good confident boost for the team. But, you know, we're back at training now, so it starts all over again.
Now, you're 36, Lisa. You've dominated women's football in Australia for a long, long time. Been at the top of your game for as long as I can remember. How long do you think you've got to go? Are you looking way past this season, or is it just something you take game by game? Have you got any retirement plans or any aims or ambitions in the short term?
It depends what day you ask me. Today I'm feeling a bit sore, and I'm thinking I should just get in the car and go back home and just give it up. And then on the weekend you score goals like that, and you think, you know what, you still have enough in the tank. So it just takes it day by day. Olympic is probably one of my main goals at the moment, and then I'll assess from there. But like I said, day by day at the moment.
Lisa, obviously, great start. What's the standard like in Australia at the moment, do you feel? You've obviously travelled a lot through the world, and is it something that gives you great heart about where we are as a country at the moment?
Yes and no. I think there's a big gap. If we're talking about W League and the talent that's coming through, I think there's a big gap. And I'm not going to lie, I've been watching a bit of a W League games, and, you know, I can see that we're just not quite there yet. And I think that we need a little bit more time, more games to get to a level where it can be a bit more competitive. So we're not quite there yet, but the fact that these girls now are in a professional environment and getting an opportunity, and, you know, once they start to settle a little bit and understand it, I think they'll understand what it needs to be a professional to get to be to a level where it's high standard at a Matildas level.
Is the hardest thing keeping the players here? Because obviously the attraction now to go and play overseas is so great. We've seen a number of Matildas do that over the last couple of seasons. Is that the hardest part?
It all depends, because it's also about environment. You can go overseas and play for a good club and not get 1 minute in a game. So, but you could stay here and have the proper support and maybe train with the boys, but the level of football might not be as high, but you've still got enough intensity. And, you know, you got to have that kind of balance of being happy, because that's important. And I know in the past, you know, I've played in big clubs, and you need to have that balance where, you know, you have that playing some good football in a good team environment, but have a life outside of football. So it all comes down to being happy to get the best out of yourself.
Lisa, tell us how crazy it was 2020, particularly when you were locked down in Italy, which must have been, you know, a really difficult thing to go through.
Yeah, it was quite tough, to be quite fair. I didn't understand what was going on. All I knew was there was some virus. And I thought, oh, that was just, you know, that will go through and then it will sort it out to something serious. So I was an idiot. I should have gone on the plane and got home, but I thought, no, it's going to go through. And, you know, 3 months later, I'm still locked in Italy and not be able to go outside. So it was mentally challenging and tough. You know, one day was, I don't even know what day it was or what time it was at times. You know, I'm making phone calls 4 o'clock in the morning. But it was challenging, but, you know, I got through it. So, you know, and, you know, the whole world's affected by COVID. So hopefully we get things start kicking through, work, life to go back to normal.
How did you train through that period? You spent 3 months locked down. What do you do when you're locked away?
I made sure the team twice and maybe 3 times a week had a Zoom meeting, and we did, you know, running inside and all that stuff. But I did something nearly every day just for my mental capacity. But the neighbour downstairs, he was not really happy. I had a bit of an argument with him, and you know, I'm a little bit of a stirrer as well, so I do it deliberately. Now, if you don't ask me nicely, can you please keep it down, then I'm not going to be nice the next day. So that was probably the highlight, to be honest, knowing that I was pissing him off downstairs. So, but other than that, like, you know, I'm pretty strong-minded, so I just kept on training and just kept try to keep a stable routine, which I did for about 3 months.
What about something simple like your diet as well? How hard was it with no sort of knowledge of when the next game would be or the next training session as a group to keep something as easy as your diet on track? I know I'd struggle with that over in Italy.
You know what I struggle the most is Italian culture, and they don't tell you it's always popping and changing, and they're like, relax, it's all good, relax, calm. I'm like, I'm not calm. What the hell is going on? I don't understand. Italian, tell me what's going on. So it always stopped and changed. If the season's happening, the season's not happening, the season's happening, it's not. And it just kept on going, like, bouncing back and forth. So that was the real challenging part for me because, you know, I'm pretty good with what I eat and, you know, there's days where I'll just pick out and there were some days I'll just eat normal. But it was more the challenge for me is, like, they just did not know what was going on and they'll just, like, tell me to calm down and like it's all good, relax, you know. I'm like, well, no, I need to know exactly what's going on because you tell me one thing and then it changes all the time. So I think that for me was probably the hardest, to be honest.
Yep. And when you got back home as well, did you have to go through hotel quarantine and how'd that all go? 14 yeah. days on your own in a room essentially.
Look, it was okay because when you come from overseas, most of the time you're jet lagged, and yep. because I've had experience for 3 months about being locked down, it was piece of cake. But for anyone that hasn't had that experience, it's quite mentally challenging. You know, because they go through a block during the day where your mind just goes, I need to get out. I can't keep doing this. But once you pass that, then it's fine. But you know, I don't mind. I just watch Judge Judy every 3 o'clock every afternoon on my favorite show. So I was quite happy.
Now, tell us about the uncertainty of what you're dealing with at the moment too, because obviously the W League, the A League, most leagues around Australia have been shifted and shuffled and there's still fixture changes and weekly updates. How is it living through that as a professional athlete?
Well, it's part of life now at the moment and we have to be flexible because, you know, we're supposed to play Brisbane the first round and then we're supposed to play Adelaide and then we went to Perth and then we're Perth at this date and then this time and we're flying out. So poor Carl was changing and chopping our flights about 6 times and we just didn't know. So, and it's hard for a coach to plan sessions because, you know, you're planning for a team like Brisbane or you're planning for a team like Perth or, you know, you know, we have our days off on these days because we're playing on. You've got to be flexible, and that's just, it's not just for us, for everyone. So we know that, and you know what? So you have to take every game that comes and take it because you don't know if it's going to be your last, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're at a good age where I'm sure you can appreciate that over such a long career. Lisa, thanks so much for joining us. All the best for the rest of the season. And it's going to be an up and down one, no doubt. But good luck against City again this week. And I'm sure the Victory fans will be barracking for another six in the back of the net.
That'll be great to see all the Victory fans out supporting us. It's quite cool to see them on the weekend. So it's cool. So, yeah, it's going to be a good game again.
Good luck. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks
for your time.
Okay, one man who might be able to help us with the age as well is Craig Gabriel, our tennis expert here on RSN 927. Craig, were you a Roxette fan back in the day?
I'm not sure how to answer that.
Now, Per Gessle, I think his name is, or Gessle, yeah. Was one half. It's his birthday today. How old are you going? Mac has gone for 64, Craig. What are you going for,
yep.
Craig?
I think he might be 63.
Oh, you're very close. We're both. At 62.
Oh. Yeah.
So Craig wins.
Craig, that's that great Swedish connection we've got with tennis and Roxette, isn't it, right. Hey?
Hard to find the heart.
It is an amazing language, Swedish. Actually, Craig, that's one question I got for you. Where have the Swedes gone? Because we had this boom in tennis for a little while, and we haven't seen quite as many of them. And they were a fixture at the Australian Open for a good 10 years there.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I actually spoke not that long ago to Mats Wilander about that. And he said, you know, the things just change. Mm. They've got a couple of young players, two brothers, the Yemma brothers. There's been a lot of talk about them making a bit of a breakthrough, but it hasn't quite happened. So hopefully it'll come around again, because they were a great bunch of players, the Swedish players. I was pretty close to a lot of them, like Mats and Stefan Edberg. It was a lot of fun having them around. So it'll be good to see the Swedes doing well again.
Yeah, and they had great supporters too.
That's did.
Yeah, but they were all from St Kilda.
Yeah, true.
They just liked the Swedes, Craig, didn't they?
Yeah.
Now, Craig, Australian Open qualifying. Before we get on to what's actually happened over the last couple of days on the court, off it, what are the requirements for the players? Do they have to quarantine in Doha, or do they do that in Australia when they come back?
No, they'll be doing that when they come back. Come into Australia, they'll be in quarantine for 14 days. Mm-hmm. Tennis Australia have got 18 aircraft on charter flights from different parts of the world, from Doha, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, I think London, Jacksonville, Florida, Los Angeles. I think maybe even Antalya, where Alex Dimino is in the semifinals. We should touch on that in Turkey. They'll come into Australia and they will have to quarantine in Australia when they do get here.
Let's start with Alex de Minaur. Tell us about him and how important that is for him going forward to the Australian Open.
Look, Alex has not been in Australia for a while. Mm. He's been at his home in Spain, in Alicante, and so he's been training and practicing over there. So he decided to go and play the event in Antalya in Turkey, and he's into the semifinals. Superb result over Nicolas Balashvili, 6-2, 6-4. And in the semis, Alex will be playing David Goffin. So that should be interesting. And, fingers crossed. I think it is an important result for him, because it's giving him a little bit of a leg up going into the Australian Open as the highest-ranked Australian, on the men's side, that is, obviously, with Ash Barty being number one in the world on the women's side. That will certainly give him the encouragement, when you consider you've got a quarantine, but the players will be allowed out for 5 hours a day for training and practice and whatnot. But this would give him a good leg up.
Just on Bernard Tomic as well, he's two wins away from that, making an Australian Open appearance. So we were talking a minute ago about whether something like this, an experience like this, could get him to become a little bit more humble, obviously having to fetch his own tennis balls and playing before no crowds. Are we kidding ourselves, Craig?
Uh-huh.
We are, aren't we? Please tell me we're kidding
don't
ourselves.
Don't associate. Oh, you thought that.
I was just hoping beyond hope.
Look, he was having to do similar sort of things when he was playing the UTR events. So it's nothing new for him now. I would hope he's used to something like that, having played the UTR events in Australia, and he had to pull out of semi or final in Brisbane because of a back issue. But it can be a reality check for some players who have been on the slippery slope downwards and then having to come back and find that they've got to get their own towels, their own water, their own tennis balls, and all that sort of stuff. But let's hope. I mean, he's coming up against another Australian. That'll be late tonight. And he's going to be playing Tristan Schoolkate of Western Australia. So that's guaranteed of another Australian into the final round of qualifying. Now, I say another Australian because one is already in there, and this is a heck of a story. Dane Sweeney is into the last round of qualifying, and he didn't even have to pick up a racket from winning the first round to get into the final round, because what happened was he won his first round over Marius Copil, who's a very solid player from Romania, and he did it in three sets. But the guy he was due to play, Dennis Kudla, has been pulled out of the event. And this goes back to the first round. a former French player now playing for Morocco, Elliot Bontrachet, was losing. But during that match against Dennis Kudla, they got a result of Kudla's test, and it was positive.
Right.
Now, if Bontrachet had won one more game, even though he was losing, he would have ended up winning the match because they would have had to stop the match. But Kudla won that last game to win the match, but he's been pulled out, and Sweeney's into the final round of qualifying. Did you get all that? I'm asking questions later.
That's an incredible story. So mid-match, the positive result came through.
Came through, exactly right. I think it was something like 6-4, 5-3, and if Bontrachet had won that next game to make it 5-4, he would have ended up going through because Kudla would have been pulled out.
Wow, what a story. Mm. Oh, well, now he's got the walkover at least. That's good for Sweeney. So
yeah.
Fingers crossed for him in the next round. So,
Sweeney, you know, again, Sweeney will play either Jason Kubler, the Australian, or Sergei Statkovsky in the final round of qualifying.
Tell us about Jason Kubler's journey, because we've spoken about him a few times over the years. He's been ravaged by injury, but where's he at with his career?
Well, look, I mean, he's a tough, nuggety guy, and it's so up and down. I mean, every time he gets some sort of a breakthrough, there's another issue physically with him. You know, he's a bit like Alex Bolt as well. I mean, the two of them seem to go hand in hand with some of these things, and it just holds him back, which is such a shame. Mm. Because obviously we'd like to see these guys making breakthroughs, but... You know, he's in the qualifying. That's all you can ask. He puts in the best effort and hopefully stays healthy and gets past Sergei Statkovsky, who is a bit of a fruitcake a lot of the time. And we'll see another Australian into the final round of qualifying. I think it's about 8 men in the final. Still alive in the men's qualifying out of the 11 that started or 12 that started. And we've only got 2 women left out of the 8 that started.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the women's side of things. Obviously, things not going quite as well for our Australian women over there in Doha at the moment. Now, Storm Sanders was another that lost overnight as well, 7-6, 6-2 to Jovan, who's the number one seed. But not quite as good for the Aussie women.
No, not so good. Alexandra Bozovic lost. Abby Myers lost to Jeannie Bouchard. Charlotte Kempinez-Pox lost. Sion Mendes, who I don't know anything about, also going out. I mean, a lot of them got wild cards. Ivana Popovic lost. The only 2 Australians that are still alive in the women's qualifying are Olivia Gadecki. And she's got a tough one next against Whitney Osigui of the United States. And Ellen Perez is the other Australian. She comes up against Vivara Levchenko, who's been around a while.
So with all those women's players, and on the men's side of things as well, when they drop out of qualifying, are they straight on a plane back home here and then quarantining for a couple of weeks in the hope of playing a few tournaments in the Australian summer after they sort of revise the schedule?
Yeah, it depends on what they want to do, whether they do want to come straight back. You know, I think what will have to happen is they wait their turn to get on the plane because, you know, with matches going, well, you know, not everything finishing at the one time. I guess they, you know, they can't have a charter flight for every single player once they get out, you know, suddenly fly them back. So they might have to hang around over there for a few days till, you know, they have the required number of people that they're allowed to put on the plane to come down to Australia. So, they could very well be hanging around for a few days till the scheduled departure dates of these aircraft. And, one positive on this issue of Australian Open qualifying being played offshore in Dubai for the women and Doha for the men is that we've been able to reduce the number of players coming to Australia at this time.
Yeah.
So it's the players, I mean, obviously the Australian players coming home, but it's the players who have reached the final round of qualifying that would be able to get on the plane to come through to Australia, reducing the numbers quite dramatically for of people coming in.
Yeah, it is, I hadn't even thought about that. That is a very good point. Craig, thanks so much for your time. We look forward to catching up throughout the Australian Open and the build-up to the Australian Summer of Tennis, which will finally be starting in a couple of weeks' time.
Tell me about it. I'm still waiting to find out when I'm coming down there.
Yeah, well, you got to get a permit now, Craig. Make sure you fill that out.
I mean, even me, they're asking me for a permit. Can you believe it?
Couldn't believe it at all. You should be exempt, like a diplomat, straight through customs down here in the Republic of Victoria. Craig, good luck with getting down. We hope to see you soon.
Okay.
I'm now to catch up, though, with Baxter Holt, the wicketkeeper batsman for the Sydney Thunder. He joins us on the line again after chatting to him a couple of weeks ago. Baxter, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
We're going well. How's your life at the moment? Not knowing where you're going to be over the next couple of days. You're just sort of living it every 12 hours?
Yeah, it's a bit part of it at the minute. We're in Canberra at the minute, so unfortunate not to be able to go back to Sydney and play in front of our home fans, but Canberra's our second home, so we're very lucky to be here.
With playing in front of home fans in the Big Bash, is it much of an advantage, or because it is sort of such a carnival, and especially this year where teams are playing away from home and hosting home games away from home, does it not matter as much?
No, it makes a huge difference. Especially our last game in Perth, we didn't get much support there with the 28,000 Perth fans. So to be able to see a bit of green in the crowd and to know that they're actually cheering for you and come to watch you, it's pretty special.
The great thing, Baxter, I reckon, about BBL is the same town rivalries as well. And we see that a bit with the Stars and the Renegades not liking each other. Tell us about the Thunder and the Sixers. Do you generally don't like each other? and that rivalry is great there?
It's always a great rivalry, especially just hometown rivals. And it's great because the crowd's always massive for those games. That's the best thing about it. We actually get along okay off the field. No, we get along pretty well. But once we're over the rope, it's pretty much mate versus mate, and we want to get the better of them.
What about the chat? Who's best on the chat from the Sydney Thunder?
Oh, I think we take it in turns, really. Some of the big dogs usually do it. Bilbo will be good to watch tonight, so hopefully he can get a few runs and be up and about.
Absolutely. Take on the Sixers tomorrow, which should be good viewing for everyone. Now, in terms of, we spoke about living it day-to-day and sort of not knowing where you're going to be next, but being based in Canberra a lot, what happens, you know, when you get up in the morning? Do you get an update sort of every morning? How does that communication come through? Do you have team meetings all the time with, I can imagine it's like a school teacher almost saying, oh, today we're going to be flying here, tomorrow we're going to be flying here. What is that like?
Yeah, it's all up in the air, really. So as soon as the manager gets an update on what's happening, then he sends that straight through. So I think it was the last 2 days or 3 days we were in Perth, we went into complete lockdown. So he told us that, and then at the same time, he told us that we're coming to Perth instead of going home to Sydney. So it's sort of just a day-by-day update. When he knows, we know. But other than that, we're just playing it by ear.
Baxter, you've got extraordinary depth in this squad, probably as good as anyone at this stage, which makes it tough for Shane Bond, as, you know, in terms of selection. Brendan Doggett got his chance to, you know, to come in and did such a good job. How impressive was he from your perspective?
Incredible, isn't it, to see people come in and do that?
Yeah.
We've always known it. I hate facing him in the nets. It's pretty scary. So the more dollar I can spend away from his net, the better. But to see him go for 4 for 18 or something like that was pretty special. And there's no better deserving bloke than him. So he's worked bloody hard for it.
What's Adam Milne like facing in the nets? Because he can really throw him down at a fair old click.
Yeah, it's awful. shocking facing all those quicks. They bowl way too quick for my liking. I'm just glad I'm on their own team and can stay away from him.
Now, on the batting front, Usman Khawaja at the top of the order. We got a fascinating insight into Usman's mindset and enjoying the moment and living in the moment, where he said he did get wrapped up too much in the media and cricket and all that sort of stuff at the start of his career and as he was progressing through the ranks. Has he had a chat to you individually about sort of living it and going along with that philosophy?
Yeah, it's really special to have guys like that and have them so accessible to when you want them. So I could ask Uzi anything at any stage and he'd be more than open to answer it. And it's really special in the period that we're in now, where we're living in a hotel room and not sure what's happening the next few days. It's really important that we live in the moment and we actually appreciate what's actually happening, and the ability for us to even have a job at the minute and play in front of such large crowds and doing it really tough. So to have that ability, it's pretty special.
Yeah, it was a fantastic perspective to have that he shared the other night on Fox Sports. Baxter, all the best with the next couple of weeks. It does seem like we're coming to an end of the Big Bash, but there is still plenty of cricket to come. So good luck with that. Hopefully you can find your way back into the team. We'll look forward to watching on our screens.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
RSN Summer Breakfast Club.